realty.com or contact us directly at 866-324-2427. Our unrivaled team approach will serve you better.
All right, we head right back to the phone, and we've been talking this morning with Stacey Williams, the author of Big Box Swindle, and we head next to Barry. Linda, good morning.
Good morning. Morning, Mark. Good morning to your guest. Good show. I have a couple of comments that I'd like to make. I always try to shop locally, and by locally I mean downtown Barrie, Montpelier, Berlin Mall, and I'm not a fan of Walmart, never have been, and probably never will be, but, you know, I have to admit that upon occasion I do go in there because I can't find something in one of my local merchants. I always try, you know, locally first, and if I can't find it, then I will go to Walmart. And one of my comments is that I think one of the things that local merchants need to do to stay competitive against the big box stores is that they need to be open hours to compete with the box stores. They need to be open when people can shop. And if you work 9 to 5 or 8 to 5, you have to be able to shop after those hours. And what has happened with some of the businesses is that they close, like, on Mondays. That happens to be my day off. So if I want to go and shop on a Monday, I can't do it. And the other thing is that, like, for instance, and I know someone brought up Allen Lumber before, and not to pick on them, but if you are doing a home improvement project and you cut your 2x4 wrong and it's your last 2x4 and it's Saturday afternoon, you can't go to Allen Lumber because they close in the morning. And they, you know, they deal a lot with contractors, and I'm not sure that they're always entirely geared toward the local, I mean, your weekend project person.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what are you going to do? You're going to have to go to Home Depot. So I think that one of the things that local merchants need to do is that they need to be open, like at 9 in the morning when Walmart opens.
Mm-hmm.
They need to be open on Saturdays until 5. The stores in downtown Barrie that are thriving are the stores that do that, Lenny's, Nelson's, Aubuchon's. Those stores are open extended hours, and they, you know, appear to do quite well. So I think that, you know, that's one of the things that, local merchants have to do. When I was a kid growing up, every store in Barrie was open till 9 p.m. on a Friday night. People went, you know, they got out of work. Families went out, you know, grocery shopping, paid their bills, did all that stuff on Friday nights. Saturdays, you know, they were always, every store was open till 5. You know, and I understand that your mom and pop stores, your locally owned people, they need to have days off.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, you know. I mean, a lot of times these people are working 6-7 days a week anyway.
Right, exactly. And that, you know, I had a good friend who was in retail, and, you know, she and I used to have this discussion. And I, you know, I perfectly understand that, and I know that they, you know, they can't afford to hire, you know, 4 or 5 other people maybe to work the hours, but I don't know. You know, I think that maybe there needs to be some brainstorming done to figure out how they can extend their hours a little bit longer, you know, so that people who do work can use their facilities.
Yeah. Okay. Let me have Stacey comment on that. Thanks. That's a good point. Yeah.
I think it is a good point, and I you know, would add, in addition to staying open until 6 or maybe even 7 if possible every evening, and having at least one night a week where you're open later, and having full hours on Saturday. I think in addition to that, another thing that would be very useful is if all the businesses in a community got together and agreed on common hours. So you knew that every Wednesday night, all the businesses in downtown Montpelier were going to be open till 9 o'clock. And you could count on that, and you could count on being able to go down there. There are a lot of downtown associations and independent business alliances that have sprung up around the country and communities, and many of them are successfully prodding their retailers to do those kinds of shared hours. and to do joint marketing. And it can be a very helpful strategy for independent businesses to be able to do that. Clearly, they do need a day off, and you know, we can't ask them to have enormous hours all week long. It's impossible. But I do think there's some opportunity for some adjustment there.
You seem to have less objection if a Walmart moves into a downtown location. Is that true?
Yeah, it is. You know, I think, there have been...
Why? I mean, what difference does it make where they are?
There are a couple of reasons. The two biggest issues with the impact that a retail store will have on a community has to do with the size of that store and its location. You bring the store size down, so instead of a 200,000-square-foot store, you're dealing with a 50,000-square-foot store, it dramatically lessens the negative impact that it will have on existing businesses, dramatically lessens the amount of traffic, the runoff from the parking lot that goes into the lakes and streams. Just about every problem associated with these stores goes down significantly when you bring the size of the store down. You're creating a store that's more appropriately sized for Vermont's towns as well. The other thing is location. You bring one of those stores into a downtown, there's some opportunity for there to be some spillover benefits for other downtown businesses. Whereas you site that store in another location out by the highway interchange, the chances that people are going to then drive into the downtown are pretty nil. People don't tend to do that. They go there and get all their shopping done at one place and then they leave. And so there's only detriment for the downtown businesses. In St. Albans, the Preservation Trust of Vermont has put together a very good proposal for bringing Walmart into the downtown.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would be, a good compromise and a solution looking at. And, I'm surprised and dismayed that Walmart has not come to the table to negotiate and to talk about doing something like that. And instead has pushed this out-of-town development.
What is it about hardware? What is it about books that's different than, say, I'm thinking to myself, restaurants? You know, we have a thriving restaurant industry. I'm thinking of, downtown Burlington in particular. It just happens to be where I live. We also have a McDonald's right downtown. Why is it that the same thing hasn't happened in the food world that seems to have happened in hardware and books?
Well, some of it, I think, is the size issue. I mean, McDonald's aren't as big as a Walmart, and therefore you still have this opportunity to have multiple restaurants in a town, and there's a chance for the local business to compete, which doesn't tend to be the case with a big Home Depot or a big Walmart. They tend to want to obliterate everything. So I think that's part of the answer. There are, in bigger cities around the country now, independent restaurants are facing a really hard time because there are a growing number of chains, TGI Fridays and Outback Steakhouse and all of these companies that are opening up outlets at a furious pace, and it is giving some of those independent restaurants a hard time.
Yeah, and I mean, my theory might be wrong, too. I mean, we have all those Olive Garden, everything else. But again, they seem like, you go to Olive Garden, you can barely get a table. I mean, what is it about the American public, the consumer, that, I mean, are we all just a bunch of idiots?
No, it's really, a lot of it's the power of marketing. You know, we absorb these commercial images from all of these companies, all day long in all sorts of ways. And, it's really easy if you, you need a toy for a niece's birthday party, your mind automatically sort of goes to Toys R Us or Target, one of these big companies that advertises that sort of thing. You're thinking about a place to eat, your mind sort of goes to the Olive Garden because you see those ads everywhere. It's sort of a natural thing, and you don't necessarily think about the local options. And one of the things I'm a big advocate for are independent business alliances, and there's actually a group starting up going here in Vermont, Think Local First Vermont.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an alliance of local businesses in the state, and the idea is that they're going to start doing this joint marketing around the idea of buying local and why it matters to support your independent businesses, and to begin to get that message out. And what these independent business alliances do in other places, they've been very successful in changing shopping patterns. We now have empirical evidence showing that people are actually shifting more of their spending to independent businesses as a result of these campaigns. And they do things like they you know, they do posters and advertisements that talk about why you should support the local economy, but they also publish, like, directories online as well as print directories where you can go and look up. You say you need a florist or you need a toy and find out who the local option is for that product, and it helps make... You know, the idea is to get the local business to be your first choice rather than your second choice.
Now, I know in California, for example, they've also kept out some Walmarts, like in downtown, even downtown L.A. So it isn't just small communities like Vermont that have been successful.
No, actually, a lot of the fights right now are in big cities because the big box retailers have really saturated a lot of the suburbs and a lot of the rural areas around the country, and they have to grow in order to keep their stockholders happy. So they're increasingly trying to site stores in urban neighborhoods in Chicago, Minneapolis, Los Angeles, even in Manhattan. And so a lot of the citizens groups that are fighting those proposals, it's actually now become very much an urban thing.
So it isn't just, there seems as though there's almost a certain inevitability.
I don't think that's the case. I've been working in this area for about 10 years, and there has been a dramatic shift in the last few years. There's greater public consciousness about this issue than there used to be even just a few years ago. Over the last two or three years, about 200 communities around the country have said no to big box development proposals. That's a huge turnaround from a few years before. Dozens, actually probably even at this point, hundreds of communities have adopted the size limits that I was talking about, where they've essentially said, we're not going to have big boxes. We don't think that's appropriate. The number of places that are doing that is growing. Maine, my home state, just this last year passed a landmark law that requires economic impact studies before a large retailer can come in. That's a huge shift. These independent business alliances, they're now going in about 60 communities nationally and are having real impact. And a lot of shoppers are thinking, you know, locally owned. It's becoming part of the mindset and what people value. So, you know, we can't deny what the big trends have been of the last 15 years, but I'm optimistic.
Is it inevitable that the trend goes the other way, that people get tired of poor service, driving so far, or not? Or the price is going to be the clincher?
I hope so. I do think that the hidden cost is becoming more apparent. I think that there are more citizens and local officials who are looking at that, and it's becoming clear that these stores are not the bargain that we've thought that they are and that we're paying for it in a lot of other ways. That's changing shopping behavior. I also think, you know, the price of oil, by all accounts, is only going to go up at this point. And the big box model is a very oil-dependent model because of the size of the stores, because of their locations, because of the fact that they source everything that they sell from the other side of the planet. Is a lot of fossil fuel use goes into that type of business model. And so I think over time, as oil prices rise, it's going to make our local businesses seem like a much better option, particularly local stores that are nestled in our downtowns so we can get to them. They're close to home.
Mm-hmm.
And also local stores that are sourcing more of their goods from the local area or from the region rather than the other side of the planet. I think that that's going to be, you know, we're going to start to measure efficiency less in terms of dollars and more in terms of fossil fuel use in the future. So I think Vermont actually as a state is in a very good position for these new economic realities because you have maintained a stronger local economy than other places.
Hmm. How do you find out more on the web about the Institute for Local Self-Reliance?
If you go to our website, which is newrules.org, it's the New Rules Project is the program within the Institute. And once you're there, you'll see a bunch of different economic sectors. If you want to particularly zoom in on the retail front, you just click on the link that says retail. We have a variety of resources. We have a library of studies that have been done by academics on the impact of big box stores. We have model policies. If you want to find out about Maine's new law or you want to look at a store size cap, you can get examples of those kinds of policies, and we have tons of research.
Thanks for your time this morning. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
And thanks for having
me. Nice to see you again. Or let's take one more call here. We go to Hinesburg. Rob, hello.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Great.
I'm interested in this topic, just a couple of comments. There is a Walmart in downtown Rutland that the city worked hard to get to locate down there, and I don't know what their success rate has been, but it is there and it can be done, and with the right reasons, and from what I understand, it was a reasonably successful effort. So there's just one item.
Mm-hmm.
But on the larger issue of the influx of the big boxes and the issue of corporate responsibility, which is to say responsibility to the stockholder to make all the money that you can. It seems to me that one of the issues that we have is that one right there, which it doesn't take into account issues of sustainability, issues of even really what I see as a national defense issue in terms of being able to make things here and have sustainable economies scattered around the country that can survive in tougher times. So it's my thought was that we should have we've developed new kinds of corporations for all kinds of reasons, the nonprofit, everything else, and we need a new kind of corporation that has equally a sense of responsibility to stockholders, but also a sense of responsibility to taking care of its workers and taking care of the environment and all of those things. And that laundry list of elements of that corporation could be developed, but I see it as government's responsibility is to develop the playing field for how free trade operates. In other words, how you interact on the playing field, and we can do that. And I think in the 21st century we have to try to set something like that up.
Huh. All right, let me have Stacy comment on that. Thanks.
Sure.
And is there anything like that even remotely going on? I guess too.
There's a wonderful book called The Divine Right of Capital by a woman named Marjorie Kelly. And I highly recommend it, and it very much speaks to the caller's point about how do we change the way corporations are structured so that they are meeting the needs of all stakeholders and not simply meeting the needs of stockholders, employees, communities, all those sorts of things. It's a terrific book. I think, though, that we also need to think about my organization sort of argues that part of the problem is that when you get large-scale entities that are controlled from afar, you get this disconnection between those entities and the communities that they're having an impact on. And ultimately, that disconnection means that they're going to behave in ways that are not beneficial for those communities. And so my philosophy is that we need to shift more of our economic activity back to the community level, that the owners and the decision makers for the businesses that we use need to be local. That changes how those businesses make decisions. You know, for example, just as an illustration, imagine that there's a town that's considering creating a property tax cutting the property tax rates. Now, if you're a big national chain operating that community, you have every reason in the world to advocate for that property tax cut because it's going to save you money. Now, if you're a local business operating in that community, you have to weigh the fact that it might save your business money against the fact that you know it's going to reduce the school budget and your kids go to those local schools. Now, that's a different calculation. You know, you have to weigh the community needs with your own personal needs because you live in that community. You end up marrying decision making with the people who feel the impacts of those decisions. And, you know, instead of having to police companies all the time, what if we shifted the way that our economy was structured in a way that it naturally was more community beneficial? And that means getting things on a smaller scale and more rooted in the community.
Well, okay, but how do you require something like that? I mean, how do you shift that, make it go in the other direction?
Well, there are quite a number of ways. One is to get rid of all the policies that favor large corporations over independent businesses. Knock out all of those kinds of policies, because our government has really driven the growth of big corporations, and we should stop doing that. The other thing is the shift in public consciousness and the choices that we make as individuals about where we shop and what kind of businesses that we patronize. There are other things that local governments and communities can do. You can look at your planning and land use law, for example. If you limit retail development just to your downtown and other traditional kinds of shopping areas, that helps independent businesses. Downtowns are really great environments for growing local businesses. For a variety of reasons, these big box developments on the outskirts of town don't create a lot of opportunities for independent businesses. So your planning law has a lot to do with the structure of your local economy. The other thing that we could do is, instead of subsidizing all these big box stores, what if we took some of those monies and spent them on small business development programs? What if we helped a new generation of entrepreneurs get started? If we could identify particular needs in the community, affordable clothing, local groceries, and helped train and finance a new generation of local business owners. So there's a lot that we could do at the community level to bring in that kind of an economy and to begin to shift things back. I think there will always be a room, a need and room for larger corporations. The problem, at least in certain economic sectors, obviously not every community is going to make its own planes, for example. Those are going to be big national companies that
yes.
do that sort of thing. So we can't, the extreme is bad, but we have tilted the balance so far in the direction of big corporations in the last few years in every sector, banking, agriculture, retail. And my argument is we really need to tilt things back in the other direction.
So you sound optimistic.
Yeah, I am. I certainly wouldn't be doing this work if I didn't think there was a lot of reason to be hopeful. And I travel around and I meet lots of people who are thinking the same thing and are really doing some innovative things. My book, it's called Big Box Swindle, and the subtitle is The True Cost of Mega Retailers and the Fight for America's Independent Businesses. And it's as much about what we do about this problem as it is just talking about the problem. You read a lot of books now that are about social or political issues, and they spend 95% of their pages going on about the problem, and then at the end there are a few little suggestions. The whole second half of my book is examples of communities that are implementing innovative strategies for strengthening their local economies and growing local businesses. And so it's a hopeful book, or at least it ends on a hopeful message.
Thanks for your time again. I appreciate it. Stacy Mitchell, the author of Big Box Swindle. We'll be back in a moment.
We tried everything. We bought books, talked to experts.
Went to obedience classes. Buddy just wouldn't be housebroken.
And now?
Well, he's housebroken. Sort of.
We can't get him out of the bathroom.
Can't.